Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cries the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance.
Hello, my freaky darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Ferlinghetti, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Join Neutron tomorrow at the After Midnight Bomber. Then delve into a world of strange magic with Incoherent Dust and Victoria Frost. Friday's a split between Crawling Into the Darkness with Pam and Break On Through. And let Basiana and Babbler teach you how to be part sinner, part saint on Saturday morning. Now, Monday mornings, join Victoria Frost with Hearts of LNP. And these shows are designed so you can color outside the lines with rich, raw emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. Now, pull up a chair, relax, and open your mind. I'm Rex, my co-host Tamara, and I can't wait to get into and read your words.
Back for round two.
Ding, 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 ding.
Hey, Rex. Oh, my goodness. Hey. Has it been one of those nights? I thought for sure things would run smoothly tonight. I had it all figured out all week what I had done wrong last week. And it was all going to work out. I was going to call you in. It was going to be smooth as freshly churned butter. Hell no.
Yeah, right.
Hell no. So, but, you know, stuff happens. You know, the boy is asleep, so thankfully. Although I will say he ate my salted caramel Milky Way bar that I was saving for myself. So, just.
That's going to be some sticky shit later on.
Oh, my, and it already was. He basically sucked down an entire bottle of green food dye like a couple days ago. And it started coming out at about 7:30 tonight. The most brightest neon blue-green crap you have ever seen. Anyway,
wow.
I'm sorry. That's my...
Where he takes lessons from the Joker.
So true. But let's focus on your topic. Aleister Crowley, what a great choice. Love the quote. I love how it's darkness with that edge to it. And I really find it fascinating that the type of, you know, it's so often it seems like true geniuses are the maddest. You know, they just very, very talented man. But, wow, just some crazy far out there thoughts. But very intriguing. And I'm looking forward to tonight's show.
Absolutely. Or to be interesting.
It sure will be. And we got a lot of awesome poetry. And we also have a guest joining us. So let's say hello, Victoria. Glad you could join us. How's it going?
Hi, Pam. Hi, Rex. It's good. How are
There's
you guys?
There's a vixen in the house.
Only for you, my dear.
Well, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. I'm going to be here as long as I can. I can't promise for too long because I do have to get up at 4 a.m. tomorrow, but I'm going to stick with you guys as long as I can. So start my night off
awesome.
Right.
Hell,
4 a.m. comes 3 hours earlier here than it does you.
That's very true. It's thank God for the grace of that, right?
Either way, 4 a.m. comes early. I don't care where you live in the world.
Oh, gosh. There's definitely not enough coffee in the world for it. I will say that.
Oh, you know what's good for that? You got to do those Italian double shot espressos. That'll put some speed in your dial.
So my ex-husband is Italian. His dad was born just outside of Rome. He was Italian. And so of the plethora of ways that I have to make coffee, I do have a percolator, and it makes the best espresso. I will give it that. But unfortunately, it is loud and it takes a lot of time to make in the morning. So I do have my handy dandy espresso machine that is not as as long, but it's just not as good.
Yeah. Then there's the other good stuff. Not that way, the Turkish coffee. Now, there's some stuff that'll...
Put some hair on your chest? Oh, my goodness.
And they don't just cook it down once. They boil it twice. So it's real pungent and strong. And you get to drink the grounds with it if you don't watch how you're drinking it.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't know that. Now I want to try this. So you're going to make me coffee adventurous as if I'm not already.
Well, if you want to be the coffee adventurous, you got to get the coffee where the civets eat the beans, let it ferment in their
bellies,
then
poop them
out. Yeah.
I've had that, actually. It's not bad. It's actually really smooth, but it's a different breed.
Yeah, it just doesn't sound very appetizing.
I mean, you know, they still roast it and everything, so it's like, you know, it kills whatever's on it. So, yeah, you know, so it's an experience.
Cool. All right, Pam, I guess we better get something going, huh?
Sounds like a good plan to me, Rex. All right. So first we have the intro poem, which is Logos by Aleister Crowley. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
Sure. Let's see. Logos by Aleister Crowley. Out of the night forth flamed the star, mine own, now 70 light years nearer as I urge. Constant my heart through the abyss unknown, its glory my sole guide while space surge about me. 70 light years as I near that gate of light that men call death, its cold, pale gleam begins to pulse, a throbbing spear, systole and diastole off ease of gold. New life, the mortal, warmth, the passion bleed, till night's black velvet burn the crimson. Hark! It is thy voice, thy word, the secret seed of rapture that admonishes the dark. Swift, by necessity most righteous drawn, Hermes, authentic augur of the dawn. And Paul. Powerful quiet
Uh-oh.
Here.
Oh, there is. There's Rex. Okay, I can hear your voice. Who did you call on the comment?
You.
Okay. Yeah, I am. Wow, it was hard picking up. It was difficult picking up poem of his. There were other ones I liked, but they were rather exceptionally long. What I like about this one is the one word title, the Greek word logos for the word, which is used as one of the names for Jesus Christ and is also used, you know, in reference to the Bible. So it has a very a spiritual incantation, I don't know if that's the right word, but, just in the title alone. And then the wonderful use of numbers, 70 light years at a near the gate of light that men call death, its cold, pale gleam begins to fall. I like that he refers to death as the gate of light, like the whole idea that it's not passing into darkness, it's not passing into the end, but rather the idea of a new realm, a new dimension to be explored. And I'm pacing too much, I have to get back, I also liked it is thy voice, thy word, the secret seed. And I think that the fact that the title is Logos and he puts in thy word really connects well together. So absolutely an intriguing write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Victoria, how about to you?
So I appreciated that Pam mentioned that that there's almost this reference towards Christ. And in that first line, we kind of also see that as the night forth flamed a star, mine own. So it reminded me of the star that lit the way to Christ in the manger. Now 70 light years near as I urge constant my heart through the abyss unknown, to me really kind of pushes back to the idea that I believe he was a man of letters. I know he was at least an occultist, and so men of letters historically try and study those supernatural nuances. They try to understand them and delve into them. And of course, this has been exaggerated on shows and everything, but this is one of those moments where, to me, it speaks of someone who says something out of the norm has happened here. This star has arose, and therefore it is leading me to this unknown abyss. The glory of it being the guide to understand why here, why now, as he's approaching this gate that men have called death, and yet it is a gate of life. It's cold, the pale gleam beginning to pulse a throbbing fear, and particularly when he says systole and systole of eager gold, that is, systole is when I believe the heart muscles contract, and diastole is when they relax. And so it is very much this throbbing, pulsating idea, not just in the sense that perhaps this light that is leading him is pulsing and showing life and longevity, thus heightening the sense of death, but also the idea of when we are confronted with death, often our heart will palpitate. We will feel our pulse. Suddenly we become keenly more aware to why we are alive. And so the idea of this being of eager gold, an understanding of perhaps alchemy and the search for the philosopher's stone. So finding this new immortal life, warmth of passion bleeding, not just perhaps in the sense of salvation, but perhaps in the sense of the mystical, trying to find a way to defeat death, to come beyond it, even if it is just this secret seed that raptures and admonishes within the dark. All the while, we are forced to realize that dawn is coming and that it will be hearkened by Hermes, who guides it. It's a beautiful, in-depth, intellectual piece that really makes you stop and think and appreciate in its brevity the idea of facing mortality and the desire to move beyond it. Just a stunning piece.
Stunning comments. God damn. I ain't going to be
well, you know, you're here on the show, so I've got to bring my game.
Well, how, I like that opening line, out of the night forth flamed a star, mine own. You could walk that as that thought to the star of Bethlehem, but it also plays out on another thought. You can think of it as the, bloody hell, where'd it go? You can think of it as the morning star, which would mark it as the you could look at it as Lucifer morning star, the morning star Lucifer light bringer. I know I'm treading on dangerous ground.
Yeah, no, I think that's genius.
But it's considering everything that he was into, the mysticism, the mystical, it kind of plays that way. Just for that brief moment. Then he hits on that thought, the gate of light that men call death, its cold, pale gleam against the pulse, a throbbing spear. But he also talks about while space surge. So there's that sort of maybe an acid trip or just the third eye view of traveling universal realms within that mysticism. And I too like the systole and the diastole on that thought. It's in the moment he's pulsing hard with blood because he hits it twice, the throbbing spear, then the systole and systole, diastole, and then again, warmth of passion bleed. But there's almost a tricality of thought going there of how much blood is being pumped around, and that could be universal because he hits on the next line is, till night's black velvet burn the crimson red, and then hark, hear, call, it is thy voice. That voice, my voice, because he opens up with that star, mine own. That's about all I got. Damn, it's awful quiet in here. Did I get dropped?
Well, for some reason, Victoria dropped. So I told her to call back. So there she is. Welcome back, Victoria. Great comments, everybody. Sorry about that. I don't know exactly what happened, but
I don't know. I was here, and then it goes, thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye. And I was like, well, that's never happened before.
I had that done to
me
the other day.
Oh, no.
What the hell? Oh, it did to me early on the first show at 10 o'clock. I was on for about half an hour, and all of a sudden, I just disappeared.
Oh, my gosh. Well, and I mean, it's technology. You know, it's supposed to make our lives easier, but really it just makes it more convoluted. But I was like, I don't know, maybe I pissed off the Blog Talk Radio gods or something, but they booted me.
Well, you must have. Okay, so before we move on to the next poem, I'm going to say something to you, Rex, and I'm going to say it nicely.
No.
This is not the night to say why thank you, Pam, over and over to me. And at the end of the show, I want to be thanked the way you thank everybody else. Capiche?
And okay, I stepped in a load of shit. Thank you.
You're welcome. I appreciate you and I love you. And thank you. All right. And we are going to go ahead and do a couple of carryovers from Break On Through, because they were recordings that had gotten missed, so I want to make sure that that they get made. So, all right. So up next is Circles by Gerald E. Green, and go ahead and find that and push play.
Circles, written in red by Gerald Green. I can't remember when I learned to hate circles, because I've been surrounded by them my whole life, beginning with curious eyes peering at my face, or round bottles filled with warm milk. Exhaustion eventually directed my attention elsewhere. But lurking in the background was this feeling, this dislike for the concentric, and love for the well-defined borders with straight lines. I still remember the day when I saw a toilet flush and noticed the swirling water circling the white porcelain and concluded that no good end could come from such swirls as I headed back to my crib with straight bars. And then there was the time, I clearly recall, when my mother placed a red plastic bowl of SpaghettiOs on the tray of my high chair, the corresponding round spoon at its side. I've never tasted watermelon, summer squash, or tomato, preferring French fries, diced potatoes, cubes of Jell-O, and pieces of pie. You know, practical food that doesn't overstimulate and offend with its shape. Biology was a difficult subject in school, because nearly everything was round. I was disciplined the day I vomited when first looking through a microscope. Sex education, well, I'll not describe what happened there. Let's just say I did much better studying poetry, although history came in a close second. Money is quite distressing, and I wish they would create a $7 bill for people like me. Then I could enjoy shopping like everyone else, notwithstanding my inability to enjoy anything ending in 99. I'm looking forward to my eternal rest in a rectangular casket, in a similar hole, in a square cemetery, with a square headstone, with the inscription in hieroglyphs. That will be nice. End poem.
Great read, Gerald. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It's greatly appreciated. All right, Victoria, why don't you kick us off? What do you think about this?
So I think it's really interesting that he starts off with this idea of, I can't remember when I learned to hate circles, because everything that he's described at the beginning of his life came in round things that were good for him. So the look of eyes upon his face, the loving gaze of his mother, his father, the idea of round bottles filled with warm milk, giving him nourishment. But as he goes on, to me, it reads much within the lines of circles. You don't know where you begin and you don't know where you end. They're kind of this ambiguous idea that just goes around and around with no real clear direction. Whereas within a square or a rectangle or a triangle, all of a sudden you have these defined lines. You have these defined parameters, whereas circles just kind of do their own thing. And so he starts to recite these moments that he didn't like. I mean, really, who hasn't had a bad experience at a toilet, be it vomiting, a bad sour stomach, or a bully? You look at it and all you can think is, well, I don't want to be here. I don't want to stay here. Who sits on the toilet and enjoys it? I mean, I'm sure there are men who enjoy their 30-minute poops, but really, it's not a room that we want to sit in and enjoy the porcelain throne. And so this idea that he's not even going to, so he's not even going to enjoy this idea of even certain fruits and vegetables, all because of their shape, continues along that idea. And I have to admit, I felt a little moment of connection because I do not like squash and I do not like watermelon. I like flavored watermelon things. I don't like the fruit, but I do like the fruit if you give it to me. It's a very weird quirk I have. But I kind of get it. They're weird shaped. They're kind of round. They're not really appealing in the sense of how you eat them. And so again, he prefers these things that are just kind of practical, as you said. They're shapes, they're squares. And in the end, even this idea with spending money with the round nines and a non-round number, a non-precise number, he ends up disliking it. And so it kind of reminds me ultimately of the idea of a square or a circle trying to fit into a square hole. His whole life, perhaps, he has wanted to fit in, and yet he has been surrounded by circles. Perhaps, while this is a clever, fun story, it also hints on the psychology of understanding how you are different. Because who truly stops and thinks about the time when they were born and the idea of wanting to avoid sex education or intimacy in general? It makes us think of the ways in which we are different. And unfortunately, the negative instances where they are, because some people don't like looking at the innards of a frog. So to look in a microscope and see those round circles causes him to vomit at what it is. And there is yet another negative association with circles because it caused him to be different. So he avoids it. He tries to fit in. He tries to find value in the schooling that he excels at and avoids the things that remind him where he does not. Very, very clever piece. But at the same time, it really does, to me, make me think of those social constructs and how we wish to fit in and all the ways we remind that we aren't quite a square whole.
Nice. Thank you, Victoria. Pam, how
Thank
about
you?
You?
Yeah, I thought that was a great comment, Victoria. And this reminds me of that fear of multiple holes where you're like creeped out by that, but it takes it like a step further. It's not just the exceptions, like the type of pod that those pods that have those kind of holes, or you know, artwork like that. But it takes it to the extreme of all things circular shape, and it's interesting how things that have a negative connotation to us when we look back on childhood. You know, that it just kind of sticks with us. You know, this one, the thing with it is, to me, it also, I think, can be taken in a humorous way, kind of this just bit of dark, twisted humor in the idea of you know, all the things that are circular that, you know, are out there that just aren't great. You know, and I think it's funny how, you know, how he mentions things like biology and sex education and all these things that in life that, yeah, they teach you the basics, but there's so much they don't prepare you for. You know, and so just a clever write all the way through and very well done.
Thank you very much, Pam. And I guess my end is, I'm going to go with the obvious. Since he starts that first stanza, I can't remember when I learned to hate circles. And then the last line, I says, oh, all round bottles filled with warm milk. And then it had me thinking of, all right, round bottles, warm milk. Maybe that's the idea and the thought, because the nipples are round. So if he's referring to round bottles filled with warm milk, then the idea comes from early at birth, missing out on the nipple because he was weaned too early or never got the nipple to begin with and was fed formula. So next stage, he's in a crib. And what is it? It is a mini coffin with bars on it, a little jail cell. So he gets defined by that little bed that he's kind of jailed in because he can't crawl out of it. He can't get between the bars. He can't crawl over it. So that reinforces thought. And then there's the potty training and then the actual toilet itself. But this thought kind of with the sex education at school had me running right back to the thought of being missed out in youth, and therefore hate came with it, and everything was round. I mean, watermelon, the Cheerios, what about the SpaghettiOs? I mean, what kid doesn't like SpaghettiOs? Of course, one who does not like round things. But I do like the back end of this, where I just want a simple casket, rectangular, in a hole about the same size, with a square millstone above my head. I'd be happy to just disappear. That way, when it comes with the hieroglyphs, comes the opportunity, all right, who the hell is this that he wants hieroglyphs as an inscription on his stone? Maybe there's something else that lies here that we need to know about.
I like that. The idea of something that lies beyond. That was a good analysis of the poem.
Well, I had to walk a different path since, damn, Victoria's toasting my ass tonight.
Uh-huh. I just can't let you get too comfy, Rex.
Yeah, that ain't happening tonight. All right, where do we go next?
All right. Up next is Blue Rider by Eric Svensson. And that also has a SoundCloud and is from the same contest. So here we go.
Blue Rider. Finger draws an imaginary line in space. Lines with stagnant air. Step back. Take a deep breath. Somersault through from square room onto light circle. Blue sky dome belly sliced open by jetliners. Puffy white sutures stitched together. Mind grapples. Cognition would staple blue together. Contain, restrain, contamination of cerulean circle. Blue rider chooses to steeplechase abstract ideas. Radiant Russian. Cadence explored cursive call. Abhor or adore simplification. Time's clock face separated two centuries. Round hamster treadmill industrial age. Megaphone hollered. Round and round we go. no time to lounge in beatitudes upon misty moors, mein Herr. Too many skirts, madame. Whalebone corsets, a joke. Delays, poke time. Simplify, electrify. A circle has no beginning, no end. Blitzkrieg bend, outdated decorums, musty mothball lines. Corchester time clock separates ages, marks progression each 100 years. Cooker pressure, industrial age, expressionism into abstraction. Kandinsky's Russian roots rounded the red square. Now look back. The imaginary line your finger drew in space disappeared. Corchester clown or ringmaster, you stand on the outside. Anti-clockwise goes the blue horse movement. No time for beatitudes, etudes, or adagios daydreaming. Circles, spirals, swallows, swift, straight lines, slice, black sky belly. Lose traditional shape, set forms, antiquated norms. Bright colors code, machinery matrix. Staccato Morse code sensors freed up. Machines will gather water, chop wood. We'll be free to create. Oh la la, mein Herr. Mon chéri, madame. Und life be in cabaret. Visionary Vasily. Draftsman recorded bad molar extraction steps. Now we know industrial age ripped out hedgehog curled up humans from Gaia's protective circumference. Was the first horse rider of the apocalypse blue? Autistic knights and knaves cloistered in concave caves. Convex Mars men and Venus women, red rubber ball bounced off. Blips, beat, tweets, Twitter, Instagram, ballroom blitz, hashtag, Aquarian age, iconic stag, musk, lamance, Gaia's doe-eyed plight, end poem.
Great read, Eric. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. And Pam, you want to go first? Victoria, how about you?
No,
No, go ahead, Pam. Go ahead.
No, I have to step away for a bit.
Okay. All right, Victoria.
So,
it's us at the moment.
So
beat me once more.
I think what... I don't know if I'm going to beat you on this one because I feel like Eric really packed a lot into this piece. To me, really reminds me of someone who almost is like cloud gazing. They're looking up into the sky, they're drawing an imaginary circle, and they're letting with that their mind kind of step into the what if zone. And with that, they start to kind of have these, if you will, abstract thoughts. At first, there's kind of that reminiscent idea of stepping back into the past, trying to look at what has separated us from where we were versus where we are now, and even perhaps where we are going. You look at fashion, and it's like a circle. Bell-bottom jeans go out of style only to come back in a few decades later, if not just a decade. There's no real ingenuity that comes within what we call, creative thinking. All the words that have been said or could be said have been said. All the fashions that we could do have been done. And now we just have this circular idea of rinse and repeat without any real idea of where they came from. When did they start? And it leaves time much like this hamster wheel as we go through just repeating the same cycle with a bit of modified technology. And so, mein Herr, Madame, we look at skirts. Once upon a time, skirts showed not only where society was with chastity, but also how well off they were. When times were poor and they were hard, we see that skirts are long. And when times are well off, the Great Gatsby, when America, for example, is doing great, skirts are short. And yet, again, the Depression comes and we see them elongate. We see the freedom leave us in our apparel. And so he has this idea of a joke. Whalebone corsets, once upon a time, were meant to show the perfect female form. But really, all it is a way to delay us, to add, if you take it as intimacy, it delays the opportunity to poke. Because there's more things that have to be taken off. And of course, when women are feeling more empowered and they're feeling more confident, perhaps because of a corset, perhaps because women's rights movements, all of a sudden it is not so easy to get where a man wants to be. And instead it leaves this idea of almost outdated mothballs as men try and find how the clock is going to tick. And we dance around pretending like something separates us, all the while truly it's just this pressure cooker that claims one day it's going to go off and not machines are going to take over, and all of a sudden everyone is going to be a dreamer and we will not have to worry about these minuscule tasks. We will not have to worry about poverty because things will be taken care of. Pleasures can be had as we so see fit. And yet we have to understand that these are hopes and dreams and imaginations. By now, in this age, there are supposed to be flying cars, and yet we are still stuck on the ground. People claim that when McDonald's started putting in the order yourself machines and the self-checkouts, that cashiers would go away, and yet they're still here. And so we cannot help but sit here and look at the irony of people saying, oh, these are going to happen. We're going to go live on Mars. But as we actually approach it, we start to realize it's like pulling a bad molar. It's painful, it's hard, and the outcome doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get what you want. And so we're stuck trying to save what we have, all the while we've spent all this time destroying it because of this future we've envisioned that never quite plays out. Satire upon society, upon how we daydream and we think all these great things, and yet we never quite follow through, do we? So, stunning piece.
Nice, because that gave me the sort of that opening stanza gave me the sort of time travel, doing his wormhole bit, because the next thing hits on the blue sky dome, belly sliced open by jetliners, and then you roll down into two centuries, round hamster wheel, treadmill, industrial age, megaphone hollered, round and round we go. It seems that he's bebopping back and forth because he walks into the next one with a thought with Germany in the early 1900s, and then again with the whalebone corset, you get a touch of Victorian in there, and then he rolls right into Blitzkrieg. So he's made a jump right into the late 30s, early 40s. And then the court jester, which kind of puts it back in the Middle Ages. So he's doing this little jump back and forth, making contact points between how things are working around clock face, court jester, funny man. And then he goes right back in. The imagined line your finger drew in space disappeared. And now you're the ringmaster, and you're standing on the outside, looking back in at what used to be. And you're you're the person in a new age. What is next? Because you're onto the daydream angle, as you pointed out. And the thought with the Matrix was pretty clever. And I agree with you. That we were supposed to be doing it, flying cars, way before now. But, yeah, that never went anywhere, along with other things that, yes, we should be doing. But he hits on everything else. We humans, hedgehog curled up humans from Gaia's protected circumference. There's that thought of being ripped out of time and space and the nurturing embrace of Earth itself. Because there's a destructive force that walks with that, because he hits on apocalypse in the next, as well as then he throws out hashtag Aquarian Age. That was supposed to be Age of Enlightenment. Iconic Stag Musk laments Gaia's doe-eyed plight. So there's a thought to maybe went too far with the sexual revolution, because now there's such a great divide between the two. That's about all I got.
I think that's stunning.
Oh,
no, you're totally good. You're totally good. I was just going to say, I think that that comment was stunning, and the Whovian in me has been called out, because you kind of mentioned how he jumps around, and it actually reminded me of a Doctor Who quote, which is, people assume that time is a strict progression from cause and effect, but actually from a non-linear, non-subjective viewpoint, it's more like a big ball of wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey stuff. and it kind of is, if you think about it, because, you know, we do claim that there's all these causes and effects, and, you know, really we see us repeating things and kind of like doing that weird little spaghetti dance through history. Oh. And so I thought that was a really insightful comment.
Well, absolutely, because time doesn't work in a linear fashion, because we hit these peaks and all of a sudden everything goes in this huge leap forward. And if you look 5 years before that, you would never have come up with that possibility. And then 5 years past the point of where you hit the peak, and then you look back, wow, we did all that in such a short span of time. Then you kind of dull out a little bit.
Well, and you also have instances like the Bronze Era. I think it was the Bronze Era that you saw in Africa. They found these cultures that actually have that were far progressed beyond what we would have expected in those time frames. And they had like gears and all that kind of stuff. That again, not something we would have expected in the Bronze Era. And yet, we have to ask, why all of a sudden are they not here? Why did technology stop there? And it also kind of, to me, makes me look at the present. You know, we've gotten so far technologically speaking. We still have so much further we can go. But what made the Bronze Era stop? And are we headed towards that unknowingly? I just thought it was a great comment.
Well, thank you. Pam, you back? Pam?
All right. Okay. Up next is The Apparition by Casey Day, and we have a recording for that. So here we go.
Trigger warning. The following poem contains content regarding physical assault and abuse. The Apparition. You thought you loved me, so you stole my heart. But you only loved what I did in the dark. So when you got tired of acid trips and cocaine kisses, you left your mark. You never missed it. Raspberry bruises on porcelain skin, covered with makeup to bury the sins. He didn't mean it. He won't do it again. That's where it started, where it began. You want to leave me? Let me show you the door. He grabbed me by the hair and threw me on the floor. He kicked me and kicked me and kicked me some more. I didn't scream. I just looked at the door, thinking, if this is my life, what am I living for? No, nobody gets to take my soul from me. So I packed my bag and ran to leave. Never turned back and never asked why. sobered up, slept the old goodbye. I saw him in passing, didn't look me in the eye. Once the drugs faded, he was just another guy who wished he could make time stop and pause it, because he had too many skeletons hiding in his closet.
Great read, Casey. Thank you very much for the sound clap. And, Pam, why don't we start with you since you missed out on the last one?
I think Pam dropped.
Oh. Okay. All right, then I guess it's up to us again.
Okay. So give me a second. I want to read the last stanza again.
Well, I can start if you like.
Oh, your call. It's the last stanza. I had noticed that Pam messaged me in Late Night Poets, and so I didn't get to quite focus on the last stanza as I wanted. So your call. Either way, I'm happy.
Well, I thought her voice in this was stark at some points and kind of matter of fact and firm in others. So it wasn't like a singular straight read. It was quite good in considering what she offered up in here. And it's not really as bad as one would think, considering the offering up top. It is bad enough considering what she is offering, but not nearly as bad as she could have made it. And I do like how she actually offered up like raspberry Bruce on porcelain skin instead of going a little bit further. And then the thought to when she was emphatic, no, nobody gets to take my soul from me. So I packed my bag and ran to leave, never turned back and never asked why. Sobered up, slap the old bitch goodbye. There's a nice, she wrote, read that assertively, that it had that nice onus of owning up to part of the situation, even though she's the whole problem with the situation. So she understands that, maybe I should have been a little bit straighter with myself at times. And then the back end where she's fully grown out to the point where she understands a lot more because she's not hiding behind that bottle, so to speak.
Absolutely. I think that was a really insightful comment because I think you recognize too, or at least you, in your comment, you noted that sometimes people do things because they too are in such a dark place, be it because of addiction or abuse, and so they continue to put up with it. And so I think that if I'm understanding you correct, I think that's really, really valid because oftentimes we'll look at abuse and think that, you know, oh, someone's just a victim. And there are times when they are, but there's also a lot of times when people play into that or they lean into that lifestyle. They don't know how to escape because it's just as addicting sometimes. So
yeah,
I think that was a fantastic comment, right?
Walk off on each other. And they kind of makes a difference. You got that vicious circle that just keeps bleeding into itself.
Absolutely. I mean, my ex-husband was abusive, and then my sister is in an abusive relationship far more than what my ex-husband was. But you're right, it's maddening to see my sister. I mean, my sister's a doctorate of veterinary. She has she's certified as a marine biologist. She's not a stupid girl by any means, and yet she puts up with her husband kicking her out of the house in the middle of winter with their newborn baby because she didn't clean enough dishes, you know, and she calls us crying. I love my sister. My job to love and support her, not try and change her life or make decisions for her. But it's maddening to have my sister, someone who is strong, a woman who is smart, and then to have her call me or my mom crying because, you know, her husband is yet again threatened to divorce her or kicked her out of the house, all for these stupid, de minimis reasons that really don't mean much in the long run. Like, who else would put up with that in normal sense? But she's so fearful and she's so afraid, and so she continues to let these things happen. And then, of course, like any circle, all of a sudden he's you know, he's in love with her, and he didn't mean what he said, and she buys into it. And so it's like, it's maddening, because in those instances, it's hard for me to feel bad for my sister, because she has the opportunities to walk away. She has the means to walk away. She has the intelligence to walk away, and yet she allows herself to keep falling in these cycles. And I think that's something not everybody always understands when it comes to abuse, is like, you can have these people who are intelligent and educated who continue to fall into it because it is an addiction, because for whatever reason, they get something out of it in those good times. So, yeah, I think you had a really valid comment, Rex.
I think you just did it well, too. That's not good. All right. Well, I see. I see we got one on the board for you to read.
We do. And I think Pam might be back.
Yes.
I know
she is back.
Oh, welcome back. Did you hear the SoundCloud? Did you want to comment on this? Not to like take over the show. It's your guys' show. I'm just here to be.
I don't. But thank you.
Okay. So up next, that Pam posted a beautiful piece by Betty Page called Voluptuous Starlight. Voluptuous starlight, shimmer bright. My voluptuous starlight, illuminate me. Caress curve to the moon, swing dangling up so high, intoxicate sweet. Delicately touch, trace your tongue all across me so seductively. Mesmerize my thoughts, intrigue with your magic, spills in universe. Sprinkle upon me your wanderlust, golden dust, so I too shimmer. Chase my desires, ride wickedly into blue, titillate in waves, electrify hearts, ignite sensual, hidden, deep thoughts, spinning round, winding your way low, only to rise as a phoenix. Revive me anew. End poem.
Great read, Victoria. And Betty took the prompt. I am the blue-lidded daughter of sunset. I am the naked brilliance of the voluptuous night sky. And Pam, what do you think? You start us off.
Well, as always, I enjoy Betty's poetry, her short, impactful lines. I like the phrase, my voluptuous starlight. You know, she's so creative when it comes to putting imagery together. Like, you never think of starlight as a voluptuous, because you think of stars or a straight line of light, and it seems very, where did you go?
Nowhere.
Okay. Oh, sorry.
Oh, just heard the voice. So I understand.
I didn't realize she was gone out of the house. She didn't tell me. So, but.
Oh, no.
So when she reappeared in the house, it's like, you kind of forgot to mention to your mother that you were going for a walk in the middle of the night. Sorry.
No.
Betty is so creative. And another one I like is, sprinkle upon me your wanderlust, golden stardust, so I too shimmer. It's just, to me, when you think of somebody who has wanderlust, you think of somebody who has the urge to know new things, to see new things. And so when you get a line like that, it's kind of like the idea of saying to somebody, show me what you see, show me what you feel, show me what you desire, because wanderlust being such a strong desire to travel and see the world. So I just think this is an amazing write and very well done.
Thank you very much, Pam. And Victoria, how about you?
I loved this poem. It reminds me almost like the child's nursery rhyme, Starlight, Starbright. Taking that adult desire to be guided and encompassed by the person that you love. It has that gentle kind of sway to it that you can't help but swing along and feel as though you are dancing within the galaxies, floating upon the Milky Way, if you will, all the while being mesmerized by this star that has lit the dark of your life, that has brightened the midnight hours in times that perhaps we might not have enjoyed so much before. And it's not necessarily sexual in nature, but there's also this beauty of wanting to take a piece of them. And even if it is just kind of like Pam mentioned, just their wanderlust, just to be dusted with it so that they too can shimmer, is such a beautiful representation, to me at least, of the way in which we strive to be better or more like the people that we love, to better suit them. And so to ask someone, please let me bear just a small marking of you, is such a soft request that I think most people can appreciate, because we do have those people. We do have that lover, or have had that lover or that spouse that we know how they've marked us. And the desire to just have a little bit more of the thing that causes us to go, wow. And so I loved it. The idea of rising anew as a phoenix, being revived, not only from the dark of night, but perhaps bring in a new dawn and a new day, and to want to create this new world together is just, it's beautiful, and it's soft, and it's gentle, and it's just stunning.
Me, I'm going to walk off the bridge. It's almost ritualistic in this, like that Wiccan ceremony in the dark of night where they strip down and dance under the light of the moon. It has that type of mysticism that walks at me, because it hits on delicate touch, trace your tongue all across me so seductively that the crest curves the moon, swing dangling up so high, intoxicate so sweet. I mesmerize my thoughts, intrigued with your magic, fills in universe. It's a nice touch to old, ancient rituals and pleasures found within the ritualizing. All right, Pam, we're coming back to your way.
I am going to have to apologize. I am going to have to hop off because I've still got to get ready for bed and get my stuff prepped for tomorrow, and I've only got like 5.5 hours. So thank you, Rex, for hosting me, as well as you, Pam. Have a great show. And I'm so sorry to be leaving, but I appreciate you guys letting me be here for a bit.
Well, thank
Thanks
you.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you for what you can do. We truly appreciate and love you.
Love you guys both. Have a great show. It is fantastic so far. So I know it's going to be a blast, but love you both and sleep well when you get
Night.
There. Night.
All right, so where are we going next?
All right, let me go ahead and grab the next one. And okay, sorry. I think I need to, okay. I felt like I had to open another tab. And all right, up next is, that is the wrong poem. Okay, let me try that again. Okay, sorry. All right. Up next is Silent Symphony by Dammit Dave. And go ahead and
Silent
get better, read Rex.
By Dammit Dave. The silence is a symphony, so please don't try to talk to me. Be quiet, and you'll find delight within the music of the night. Just listen and don't interfere. The hands of God are working here. Don't interrupt. Respect my plea, and you will hear its melody. Behold the night when all is still, and heed the silence. Feel the thrill. The peace you feel will be your guide to what the quiet can provide. Each unheard note is ecstasy, and it can set our spirits free. So sit with me neath moon's soft light. Enjoy the music of the night. And Dave Cook, having to talk destroys the symphony of silence. All right, Pam, what'd you think of that? Shut up, Rex. It's too loud in here. Be quiet.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. The silence is a symphony. Well, we certainly don't say that a lot around you, do we? Or me, so not too much silence. The silence is a symphony, so please don't try to talk to me. Be quiet and you'll find delight within the music of the night. In the music, that's a nice little reference to the Phantom of the Opera. I like the rhyme and flow of this. I do like the idea, because, you know, honestly, if you think about it, there's never really truly silence. And especially if you live out in near the country with the crickets singing and all those kind of noises, or even houses, like especially old houses, shift and creak. And, you know, I think too many people try to fill in gaps emotionally with having constant background noise and don't really try to take time to listen to the movement that is of silence and life. And I like each unheard note is ecstasy, and it can set our spirits free. So that is absolutely just a beautiful line and very well done.
Well, I like the thought with the music of the night. It reminds me of something. What was it? Listen to them, the children of the night. What sweet music they make. From the... was it 1932's Dracula, 1933, something like that? It is.
Oh,
it does
okay.
Come. Everything is so much filled with sound these days that you don't have the thought to actually sit at night and listen. The crickets chirping, the breeze rustling through the trees. There is a symphony out there. If one were to actually just sit and listen, you could feel the air whispering through your ears. There's a note to flavors walking across your skin, the sound of life itself beyond our own existence. There is more than just us. We don't have to be thoroughly music makers all the time. We should listen to nature and all that she has to offer. That's where a lot comes from.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, one of my favorite nighttime sounds, and unfortunately I don't hear it anymore, and I don't know if it's because I live in a slightly different area, but the town I grew up in, like I lived out in the middle of the woods, there always, every night would be a whippoorwill or a whippoorwill, you know, those birds that come up there at night and make that really loud sound, whippoorwill, whippoorwill, you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, but I got a barred owl out here that does his own thing, and I like when he laughs.
Yeah, I remember hearing your barn owl before. But, you know, it's so sad because I loved that sound of that bird. It was such a comfort at night, and I just don't hear them anymore. But, yeah, no, I wish I had a barn owl. That is really cool.
All right. Where are we going to go next?
All right. Let's see. Next, and I guess I don't have anybody else. I can't make you read all night. So.
Oh. Talk about
Blue
Waters.
I guess I'm going to have Blue Waters.
Yeah, that picture is full blue. And funky.
You mean, oh. I haven't put, are you talking about the poem? Holy smokes, wow, look at that.
Yeah, that's a full blue. all the way around with just a tint of color here and there.
Well, you know what I think that is? I think that's from one of Aleister Crowley's tarot decks.
Hmm. You're probably right, because I haven't seen it, but it does, actually, yeah, it does. Considering it says the star, and he's got a couple of, well, he's actually got a Jewish symbol on one side, and I'm not quite sure what the other one is, except that's probably a symbol for water on the bottom end. So, yes, I would venture a guess that it is from this tarot deck.
That's what I'm thinking. That's what I'm thinking. All right. Well, this is Riding the Rainbow by Gypsy Lady 13. I ride the rainbow line between your light and my darkness. I stroll softly through your dreams. I am the evening silver star. My eyes glisten emerald pain, gold dust rain. Wrap me in dusky shades of whispered twilight. Allow me to wallow in your radiance. Together as one we shall become, shimmering star glow, adrift in the indigo. End poem. Oh, by the way,
Great
she has a whole bunch of notes in her AN that you might, that actually say pretty much what we were talking about.
Yeah, the silver star in stanza two is a reference to the Order of the Silver Star. Is a spiritual organization described in 1907 by occultist Aleister Crowley. Its members are dedicated to the advancement of humanity by perfection of the individual on every plane through a graded series of universal initiations. Its initiations are syncretic, unifying the essence of Theravada Buddhism with Vedantic yoga and ceremonial magic. The AA applies that it, what it describes as mystical magical methods for spiritual attainment under the structure of Kabbalistic Tree of Life and aims to research, practice, and teach scientific illuminism. A is often held to stand for Argentium Astrum, which is Latin for silver star. And oh, nicely done. Wow. Now that I read all that, would you like to make a comment? She did take the prompt, I am the blue-lidded daughter of sunset, I am the naked brilliance of the voluptuous night sky. That seems to be the popular one that most people pick.
Yeah. And you know, I think it's because it's, well, first of all, it's rather sensual in nature, and people are attracted to sensual. But it also is a very open prompt. Like, nobody knows for sure who or what the blue-lidded daughter of sunset is, the naked brilliance of the voluptuous night sky. I mean, that in itself, you don't just write about the night sky. You write about everything that occurs under the open night sky. I can see why that would be a popular one. I like how this has an almost, it's a combination of spirituality and sensuality. It's very much as if somebody's speaking to someone who has more knowledge, and they want that knowledge and they want to share let's see, I stroll softly through your dreams, I'm the evening silver star. And I really like how there's that kind of that rainbow line. Well, that rainbow line between your light and my darkness, as if it's the whole idea of a yin and yang, and the idea of balancing out or that, and I don't know. For me, I think of the rainbow as being a type of bridge between the two. So it's really just an intriguing rite all the way through it, and very well done.
Yeah, I thought that opening was nice. It had me thinking of, Twilight Time, the in-between, that little venue where things aren't totally dark, but they're not totally light either. It's just an odd bit of nice glow. But she hits on that, together as one we shall become, shimmering star glow adrift in the indigo. So is that sort of, because he had thought, what's it, wrap me in dusty shades of whispered twilight. Oh, there, I got twilight. So it's the moon kind of talking to the sun, I guess. or the silver star itself, and offering up the thought of you hit the central angle, so there is that that notion of finally meeting somewhere in between, rather on opposite ends of the spectrum where they actually lie.
All
right, where would you like to go next?
All right. I am going to put up a poem for you to read, and if you get done reading and I'm not back, go into commenting, though I should be back. I'm sorry, I got to go take some sinus medicine. I feel like the back of my eyeballs are going to explode. So, with that being said, it's a lovely image. What's that?
Let your medic take care of your problem.
All right. Up next is Pharmacomania. You know what? You just say the title and read the poem, please.
Pharmacomania, P-hydroxycocaine by Luke J.R. Pharmacomania, P-hydroxycocaine. Rusting through the leaves of an undisturbed skirt, hand shaking while gliding over her canvas. I'm addicted to the sensation of your touch. All your words are bittersweet, tasteful with indelicacy. I'm addicted to the vendetta under your umbrella. Rainfalls feel like acid on the skin when our eyes gaze within each other. I'm addicted as your lover. I'm addicted to being undercover. Rewinding through old tapes that you thought were lost to time, repaired. Flickering images of hauntingly disturbing imagery. We weren't prepared. Voices flicking, volume followed by your voice. I'm addicted. I'm addicted to the imagery that's flashing in front of my eyes. It's the next morning. No sleep for me, but my heartbeat continues for you. I walk into your shadow at the room. I'm now too afraid to enter alone. The static continues to violate my mind. My memories are flickering out. I'm the untamed fire that's out of control. Your voice is keeping me whole. Held at the price of a cheap store-bought gun. Ammunition is zero. Bedsheets stained red for my misunderstandings. Regrets hanging on threads. I've hooked on the feeling of this lust for bittersweet goodbyes. I'm sorry. Our wedding feels so distorted. I've got no memory of the happier times. You've become addicted to the sensation of power, thrill, and excitement. I've got a rush of adrenaline that burrows into my mind like a bloodworm, razor-sharp claws, absorbing all the energy within happiness. I'm addicted. I'm addicted to the clump of sugar. We scurry like ants to an unwatched nest, once abandoned, thought to be lost. Deep within, I know that you're the queen that's hooked up to those machines. I'm addicted. I'm addicted to carrying you onto the corpse wagon. An umbrella of happiness is what you're holding. Sadness seeps through. I'm holding the most broken parasol. I'm not able to hold an umbrella like you. Rustling through the red-dyed leaves, flesh becomes branches reaching out, and shaking like to reconsider what I've done. Violated from within through too much time that's passed without me, I'm unaware of the poison they've left for the ants. I'm sorry. Deafening beeps continue to keep me agitated. I'm on air pressure pulses. I've become an ionized form within the now distant moon. On the acidic sun that's bitter with every ray of hope. I'm sorry. I've detected you within the urinal samples after every gasp for air. Vasoconstriction tended to block out the voices within my mind. Approaching me through a mist of uncertainty, I hold you in my arms again. I'm looking worse for wear. You wouldn't want to put me out outside. I'm blocking the sodium channels between us. I'm a corkscrew unpushed. I'm addicted. I'm addicted to the embedded thoughts resting by my bed. Our bed is the color of red. I'd rather sleep with my eyes open than closed. I'm followed by the red and blue hues that you warned me about. Is this just a side effect of the kiss that left a bitter taste in my mouth? Or am I starting to introduce myself to a pure innocence of my own actions? Whatever I've done, I've washed our old tapes too many times. I'm dressing for every session. I'm starting to reach the edge of a confession. Did you watch it too? Signed. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Patient. poem. Damn. You back there?
That was an awesome read, Rex.
Well, hit on some thought out of it, because that dried me up.
I was going to say, you need to, like, get a drink of water or tea or something.
What's going to happen in the middle of the piece.
Well, you know, just you're allowed to step away and take care of your throat. But anyways, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to bring Felon on, and then I'm going to comment on the poem. So welcome, Felon. Glad you could join us. How's it going?
Thank you. Pretty good.
Easy.
I'm having a hard time. I can't get the internet to pull up while I'm on the phone. I don't know what's the deal. I'm going to be working on that here real quick. All right, bye. I'm back online. Yes, sir. Yay. Okay. Sorry.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, first of all, wow. That picture, that is a horrifyingly dark picture. It's almost like taking the act of cutting to the extreme. The idea of wanting to rip your own face off. I like the repetitiveness in this. I'm addicted to the sensation of your touch. All your words are bittersweet, tasteful with delicacy. I like that he puts tasteful within delicacy, because I don't know. For me, this has the general idea I get is that kind of abusive relationship where they throw something nice in every once in a while, and you think, oh, this is wonderful. This is improving. This is the best. And so every time there's like those barbs, you know. But and I like how he treats it like an addiction. And the nice thing about this is it works well on a metaphorical level too. Like it can be addiction to a drug, or you know whatever it is, or to a person. Wonderful imagery is held as the piece of a cheap store-bought gun. Ammunition is zero. Bed sheets stained red from my misunderstanding. Regrets hanging on a thread. Regrets hanging on a thread is that whole idea of just being like seconds away from snapping. And wow, I've got a rush of adrenaline that burrows into my mind like a bloodworm. I don't know what a bloodworm is, but whenever I think of worms burrowing, I either think of Dune, or I think of Tremors with Kevin Bacon. And it's just, to me, anything that burrows under the sand that you can't keep an eye on and eats people, kind of is scary. But I'm holding the most broken parasol. I'm not able to hold an umbrella like you. That line conveys to me such strong imagery of an insecure person who feels like they're incapable of taking care of themselves. Feels like it has a very codependent feel to it to me. I like how Luke always has layered rights that you can read multiple times and get different things from. So powerful right and a wonderful read there, Rex. Very well done.
Great comment there, Pam. Thank you very much. And B, did you get to hear this by any chance?
Hear me, Felon?
Yes, Felon.
Yeah, I did. No, I actually just read over it, and I was very impressed. And I got something a little bit different than what Pam got. This is a true thing to the drug itself, and to the addictive person or the addiction that they have, and that's to whatever drug it is. And it's really just, it controls him, because from the first taste, he knows it's bitter, but it's also, oh, just so not. It's what the body displays, or what he's craving for his mind. And he knows that the only way to get out of it is just to peel himself from the outside in. So this is just a phenomenal, phenomenal write. And it's very chaotic, but at the same time, it's very well written. And I think that it's just a true depiction of addiction and just a marvelous piece. Great job.
Nicely said, Phil. Thank you. And you're right. It is chaotic, but that it needs to be writ that way to get across the how it feels going through that end of it, especially when you're coming down the back end. Everything, nothing tastes the same. You think in different chunks. What you had a couple of hours ago while you were speeding along, all those great thoughts. And then he hits on that thought of watching the tapes and then digging back into, ooh, that doesn't come across quite right. There's a little bit of gaps in the language, the thought process, and how one carries on. And then I like that thought with, I'm addicted. I'm addicted carrying you onto the corpse wagon. An umbrella of happiness, what you're holding, sadness seeps through. I'm holding the most broken parasol. I'm not able to hold an umbrella like you. That's quite a lot in that dedicated carrying you to the corpse wagon. Eventually, people do walk down that road. It's not something that happens often, but people tend to, you can get overloaded. It'll shut your ass down. Next thing you end up is one of those cold little bodies on a corpse, on a morgue table. And I like the thought, the end of it, where he sits on the chemical compound. Patient, D17, H21, NO4. A different type of finish, but also gets the point across. All right, Pam, where you want to go?
Absolutely. All right. I have to say that, I always like hearing Luke's poetry in your voice, Rex. Mainly because you know how to pronounce the words, and I don't. But all right. Up next is your poem, Felon. Go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Okay, thank you. Of course, I just wrote this. And I wanted to contribute something, so here we go. And it's called Cut It Out. Small lines cut from the purest toxic hell. Three lines for help. Second, to act, accept the sin. Third, inhale the wrongs from what now is numb. 5'10" below that is how you stand. Charisma of a mamba, scaling belonging to a man. Slithering to an attribute to belly cowards talk, stalk. Reflections makes eye contact on sipping on nose candy. Destruction summoned misery off the white chalk enzyme. Chaos loves the bitter taste of cocaine, the lips of toxic fear.
Great read, Phil. Thank you very much. All right, Pam.
Thanks.
Kick it off. 10 minutes ago. Damn you, girl.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't catch you saying my name. Wow. I mean, once again, you whipped something up like within 2 minutes. Very impressive. I like the title, Cut It Out. Simply because I feel like it has double meaning, and that's creative in the idea that it refers to the cutting of the cocaine, but also the phrase cut it out as in and stop it, stop doing this shit. A hard-hitting brevity as always. 5'10" below, that is how you stand, charisma of a mamba scale belonging to a man. I mean, first of all, that is such a great way to tell somebody, you know what, you might stand fairly tall physically, but you are nowhere near being a man. And to use mamba was such a creative way to call somebody a snake, I like the word serpent and I like the word viper. Goodness knows I've used them before. But the fact that you came up with a different kind of snake and type of snake that's known for being very hypnotic in its movements and very deadly. Reflection makes eye contact on sipping a nose candy. Destruction summons misery off a white chalk enzyme. I feel like that part there is telling somebody, you have no one to blame except yourself. Get yourself together. But, that's just my thoughts. I think the way you pack so much thought into a few lines
is just always impressive. So very well done.
Thank you. Thank you, Pam.
Well said. I got to go with that first. Small lines cut from Zero's Toxic Hill. Three lines. One for help. Second, to accept the sins. Third, inhale the wrongs of what now is numb. Ooh, that's a loaded opening two lines there. Especially the first one. Hey, that's supposed to help with what's going on. The second one is the acceptance of the sins being committed. And the third one is not only the mind, the nose, you're getting a little on the numb side. And what comes next is that center, 5'10" below that is how you stand. Charisma of a mamba scales belonging to a man. Withering is the attribute of belly coward's thoughts. It isn't just the sliver, the slither, this guy. This guy is really quite a low life. So at the end of it, reflection makes eye contact and sipping on nose candy. As you're looking in the mirror at that moment, checking under your nostrils, because it kind of gives off that that bathroom scenery. Destruction, stomach, misery, off a white chalk enzyme. Chaos, love to meditate, the cocaine of the lips, the toxic fears. So is that the fear of understanding, the fear of knowing what you become, or the acceptance in that fear because you're not going to have any other life because this is what you've chosen?
Wow, I'm very impressed on both of you guys because y'all have nailed it. I mean, basically, it's when, you know, we actually ingest things in our life. It doesn't necessarily be the cocaine, but it is something that still numbs us to the core of who we are. And that's, it could be in a relationship. It could be just somebody. And I think Pam said it very well when she said that even though they stand 5'10", they don't measure up to what a man's size is. And that both got it with just, you know, with the reflection. And that's when you're sitting there looking at yourself in the eye when you're inhaling that shit, you already know you're fucking up, but yet you just go on to the next line, to the next line, to the next line, to the next line, hoping you can keep numbing it and that it will get it and you will be able to adapt and accept it. But the end of it is, it's a very bitter taste because no matter how you look at it, you're still kissing the fears of whatever it is on a daily basis. So quit putting the shit up your nose is what I'm saying. Quit inhaling them. Let them go. Blow them out. So that's what I say. That's what it means to me.
Not to mention blowing out your septums because it's stuff that eats the hell right out of it.
Yeah, that would be great. Awesome.
All right, Pam, where would you like to go?
All right. I can't believe it's already past 1 o'clock. Time flies. All right. So up next, I'm actually going to read my poem, which was inspired by modern morality and morals suppress natural instincts, keep people ignorant of the facts of nature, and then fighting drunk on worldly tales. All right. And this is The Purity of the Violent Flame, and it goes like this. Pain towns of the midnight mass, incarcerated urges calling foul. You play so pretty with violent prayers, dented piccolos to prove your purity, one sharp note at a time, naked virgins weeping, intoxicated formulations, mud-slinging acrobats in a belfry rising to pierce orifice occasions. One by one you stand in line, one by one you pay the fine, purify your kin, purify your sin. The light once bright is growing dim. Dollars in a mallard's clothing, lackey lips are licking loathing. Boring whores with festering wounds of melancholy, tossing mustard seeds upon the duties of famished flesh gone feral. Swallow the oil, burn the vulgar flame, regurgitate the storms, wake the beast resting upon wall clocks of scorpions juiced. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And you took the one prompt I thought would get some more thought. Modern morality and morals suppress natural instinct, keep people ignorant of the facts of nature, and then fighting drunk on Bogey Dale. I thought that'd be a prompt that people would enjoy playing with.
It was. I thought it was fun to play with.
Let's get you coming. All right, Ellen, what you think?
I'm very impressed with this, Pam. As always, I think I like your approach on things because you're just in your face, kind of blunt. It's basically because your actual quote was, or prompt was, modern mortality and morals suppress natural instinct, keep people ignorant of the facts of nature, and then fighting drunk and boogie tales. And that's basically, I might be way off base here, but I thought maybe it's when, as a child, like we were brought to the churches, and we were, you know, pushed in there. That's what I'm getting from the very beginning, is the, you know, the midnight mass and everything. But yet we still see the same shit going on after the masses and things were over and after the church, and still all this chaotic things are happening. But yet they want us to still believe on that Sunday or whatever, on Wednesday, whatever our mass is. And then to prove the purity of one sharp note at a time. That's just somebody blowing more shit up our ass on a daily. Then the naked bird is weakened in intoxicated formulations, and that's basically, you know, that not just because they're angels or they're saints or whatever they are, they still too are sinned. And I mean, it goes on and on. But what really spoke to me is just swallow the oil, burn the vulgar flame, regurgitation the storms. And I truly do believe in that, that we swallow the oil is that of that what they want to anoint us with, and yet, but we still have that dirtiness in us, but we have to learn to love ourselves and let it go and heal from there. So that's what I got from it, and this is wake the beast resting upon the walls, clock of scorpion's juice. And that's what's always, we don't always see when the sting is coming, and it's usually been over backwards, and it gives us when we least expect it. That's what I gathered.
Oh, I like that. I like that. Thank you.
Damn, Bell, you covered everything. I like it. It does point heavily at the hypocrisy and you know what? It might be the fact that the Catholic Church still relies on archaic control and impressionism instead of actually trying to accommodate and work with their parishioners, so to speak. Meanwhile, you've got the priests who are diddlers themselves. Yeah, how's that working out for you guys? So it does hit me at the heavy hypocrisy therein, because you sit there, which you hit on that note up top with mudslinging acrobats in a belfry rising to pierce orifice occasions. Oh, yeah, there's a few thoughts there. Purify your kin, purify your sin. The light, once bright, is growing dim. And there was something else. Fell hit on the swallow the oil, burn the vulgar flame. There is a notation to incense and the anointing of the oil there. And one by one, you stand in line. One by one, you pay the fine. And still, you got to do it every week because it's required. As opposed, you know, the thought was that all your sins are taken as unto Christ upon His death. You're supposed to be, yet you're supposed to keep producing. I mean, you got people who actually make stuff up to go see the preacher, the priest, in the confessional. Well, that's kind of. Well, if I don't make something up, then I've got nothing to tell him. Well, tell him you've been good.
Right? Well, that's why I like to be as naughty as possible in case I ever
believe it. What did you really do?
I said, I like to be as naughty as possible so that if I ever do become Catholic, I have lots to shock the priest with.
You're going to have a lot of
probably engaging in it himself.
A lot of repent. All right, well, we better go ahead and move on. One wonderful comment there. Thank you, Rex. And all right. Up next is Invincible by Orange Sage. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
Invincible by Orange Sage. She'll sleep a million midnights to return to her dreams, and if sunset wakes her, she'll look into Satan's eye. Whole again, cured of sin, well, almost. A girl's entitled to gather her oats. They say there are oat silos upon rainbows, she'll haul herself leg by arm, crawling along the top. And if she could fall, she'll pick herself up. Who says she can't sin for 100 years? She remembers an old sin. Is it too sinful to bite into an apple if you are hungry? She's bitten into many a fruit, and once she stole a loaf from a prophet, but she thinks he offered it when he saw her want and hunger. She could never walk on water, though. She sank in an ecstatic surge of bubbles, but that's a story for another time. Sunset, what ambient pleasures, bursting the engorged sky, perfect as that breathless, blinkless moment, crack seconds before the birth of dawn. End poem. And Orange, too, took, I am the blue-lidded daughter of sunset. I am the naked brilliance of the voluptuous night. All right, Sal, what you think?
Well, reading the prompt, it says, I am a blue-lidded daughter of sunset. I am the naked brilliance of voluptuous night. Basically, she's saying she's a whore. that's what I gathered from it, because she's going to sow her oats, but not so much as a professional, but like she is as to enter her own. She hasn't decided what she wants to settle down with, so she's going to take a little peek and a little nibble of everything that's out there, is what I see. And that, you know, a good sign of that is where it states here, it says, she will look into the Satan's eyes, whole again, cured of sin, well, almost, a girl entitled to gather her oats. And that's because, sow her oats and to find out where she belongs. And then what she says here, she could never walk on water, though. She sank in the it's just a surge of bubbles. But that's a story for another time. Basically, she'll never walk on water. She's never going to be one that is holier than thou. But yet, she still tries to actually follow some morals and some values. But though she does skim the line on it. So this is an excellent ride. I think it's a really good depiction of the prompt.
I like it. Thank you, Phil. All right, Pam, how about you?
Yeah, that was well said there, Felon.
Oh.
I like, first of all, well, it's interesting that the third person narrative gives a very story-like feel, and yet it does kind of, well, to me, it really it has a tone of somebody who's rebellious. Where is this? She stole a loaf of bread from a prophet, but she thinks he offered it when he saw her want and hunger. I feel like that relates to, those that take advantage of people. The exchange of as if she was a whore, and the exchange of services, which the prophet will deny, and nobody will believe the whore, she could never walk on water, though she sank an ecstatic surge of bubbles. But that's a story for another time. That's a wonderful stanza that leaves us hanging, and I like the reference to not being able to walk on water. You know, like the whole idea of this scene in the story in the Bible where Peter tries to walk on the water and then looks away and drops down. Jesus says, oh, ye of little faith. And it's kind of like the idea of the church saying to someone, you don't have enough faith. But how is somebody who has been demeaned and degraded down to the point of having to sell themselves, how are they supposed to find the kind of faith that a person who lives an easy life finds? You know, I think it's a powerful rite and very well done.
Well, you two have stripped off all the meat. There's not even any bone left for me to actually chew on. Thank you very much.
Well, you can suck out the marrow.
Well, I do like that Stenta one. She remembers an old sin. Is it so sinful to bite into an apple if you are hungry? But that hits on both ends of your thought. Her hunger is sexual in nature. She's bitten in many a fruit. And once she stole a loaf from a prophet. Now, is that a supposed thought with the loaf and the prophet? Or is the loaf actually what the prophet offered when he lifted his whatever it is. But she thinks he offered it when he saw her wants and hunger. Well, maybe there was reciprocation in that thought. Otherwise, she wouldn't have taken it to begin with. Because she does like to dine on things that she's hungry. She's insatiable. Kind of hits on that note of nymphomania. Because there was one Roman leader's wife who challenged a whore to a fucking contest, and she outlasted the whore and kept going.
I remember reading about that.
And this was a very famous madam of the day.
Oh man, yeah. I can't imagine. I'd probably have to roll over, go to sleep, and say, okay, you win. Oh, crazy stuff. But, great comment there, Rex. See, you found plenty of meat to dig into. You always do. You always do. And up next, we have The Day That Occurs in Moments by C.R. Johnson. And, Felon, can you give that a read for us, please?
Absolutely. And this is by C.R. Johnson, titled The Day That Occurs in Moments. 1. While Jasmine clutches her fingers, essentially, a silky smooth hand caressing the flesh, and she's sucked into the divine depths of the abyss to bathe in blue-green waters. My fingers burn and pulsate, and naked I lay, scraping wax off my palms. Return to the gray prison walls cracked, no endurance in the lot. I make my journey soon to the sanctuary, where a new day and new sensations await. 2. Reveal you, God, and all those that rise in your wake. With my moral judgments, what oppositions have you enacted in tortures and exertions? Throw down the capsules of the thousand pills and down them with bottles, absence labels, and the fires burns down in the mirrors to cry, not deluded, not without sin, honest, mislead and deceive like you, still at the altar praying, like all those lost in the wilderness of time and point.
Nicely read, Sal. Thank you very much.
You.
All right, Pam, what'd you think of CRs?
Am I off mute? Yes, I am. Okay. I really like this one. I think he's fairly new to writing for our contest, and it's always good to see a new face and new rights. And I see he's got a pending pick. He's on the pending picks list with this, so very cool. This is a wonderful a vignette. While Jasmine clutches her fingers, sensual, silky smooth, hand crushing the flesh until sucked into the divine depths of the abyss, bathed in blue-green waters. Again, we have a rite that combines sensuality and spirituality in such a way to almost make it dark and controlling. Reviled you, God, and all those that rise in your wake. What moral judgments, what opposition have we enacted for torturous excrement? Throw down the capsules of a thousand pills and down them with bottles, absent labels. You know, that makes me very much think about, like, medication is too easily given out. And anybody who knows me knows I'm obviously not opposed to medication. But it makes a great metaphor for the whole idea of a cult-like mindset that says, this is what we're handing you. This is what you will swallow. This is what you will believe. I find this just a strong and intriguing rite. You know, I like the whole idea, like in the end where he says that this isn't about diluting, it's about being honest. And it's very raw, and I hope we get to see more of his writing on the shows.
Well said, Pam. And Bell, you got to read this piece. What do you think?
I really enjoyed this piece for the simple fact it's very It's very, I can't say it. Very thought-provoking because it takes a lot of, it challenges my mind because what really got to me most was here when it says, until sucked into the divine depths of the abyss to bathe in the blue-green waters. And yet the blue piece of the blue, there's a picture above that goes with this and it's blue and it's like the abyss, like it's got a triangle. To me, it's like the Bermuda Triangle. It's like being sucked into that vortex of that whole entity. So, I mean, I don't know if that goes with it or whatever, but to me, it just basically says that we get lost in judgment, we get lost in the triangles of what other people think of us, and at the end, it says still at the altar praying, like those lost in the wilderness of time. Even though you get lost, you still can look in one place and ask to pray. So that's what I gathered from it, and it's an excellent rite.
Nicely said. I got that opening vignette had me. Intrigued. Because the first six lines kind of offer up that tone of self-gratification in the moment, but then the last four kind of walk into that thought of a nunnery or a monk atmosphere. Return to the gray prison walls, cracked. No endurance and a lot. I make my journey soon to the sanctuary, where a new day and new sensations await. So there's kind of a duality in that first vignette, the before and then the after. And then that second one opens up, reviled you God, and all of you, all of those that rise in your wake, what moral judgment, what position have we enacted for torturous excrement?
Yes.
There's quite a bit in that too. The thought about suicide, throw down the caps for 1,000 pills, down them with bottles, absent labels. The fire burns down to the mirrors you cry, not deluded, not without sin. And the honesty, mislead and deceive like you. So, the God in this, is he actually reviling God, or is the God he referring to the thought of the devil, which is kind of maybe the offhanded thought in the first vignette. And then, but then again, it's still, it offers up a duality because you've got both ends playing here. And then you got still at the altar praying, like all those lost in the wilderness of time. So each kind of mirrors back on itself and makes you think about, all right, what's really going on here? Because he seems to be hitting on both levels.
I like that. I like that you mentioned the duality and the focus on both levels and the questioning within the poem. All right.
Well,
it
goes to the thought. You can't have light without dark. You can't have God without the devil. You need that yin and yang, that balance. Otherwise, one is too imperious over the other.
That's right. You can't have dancing without the groove and whatever else. But yeah, you're right. No, you do need the two sides to be aware of the good moments. You need the ones that bring you down. So, absolutely. All right. Our last poem for the night is, and the rest will be carried over to next week, or the dark show if I don't get enough rights for the dark show. And the next one is Life is Not the Domain of the Petty by Thomas D. And Rex, go ahead, give that a read for us, please.
Life is Not the Domain of the Petty by Thomas B. True beggars want from a lack of life. The poverty has even death turn away. So they shiver naked upon the banks to the left, rubbing shekels together. Not understanding the terms of trade, they wail. Have little to offer in the way of stories anyone wants to hear. Adventures are a product of curiosity in the service of boldness. Limits, challenge, are never allowed to prevent what waits to be done. There are those who quiver and turn away when one seeks to incite rebellion with heresy. Others caution, speak of what cannot be accomplished, deny the heart's longing, the spiritual ache. Only overcome when one tugs the devil's beard, dances with fortune, and dares to ask for more. Death, no more than a place as rich as you have lived, a place to relinquish baggage, assure oneself of necessity, cleansed of excess, reawakened to possibility. It's the sudden awakening of mercy, we are flung back to the womb. We shall wither or grow, not from piety, not from proper posture, ill-advised blindness created by correctness. No. We who will forever be the source of the ever-expanding universe come back to life full of stories, visions of greatness, and a willingness to tackle the impossible because being alive never asks for anything less. And poem. All right, Pam. Hey, yeah.
Oh, great read there, Rex. You know, I really enjoy the way Thomas is writing. It is like, I don't want to say it's a soapbox, but it's a man telling the world what he sees and sharing his knowledge. There are those who quiver and turn away when one seeks to incite rebellion, dance with heresy. Others caution, speak of what cannot be. You know, there comes times in life where heresy, where rebellion has to happen. And you're either that person that sits in the corner shivering and quaking, or you're that person who wants to move forward. Or worse yet, you're that person that tries to convince people that there's not a problem. And I like this all the way through, but it's also like we shall wither or grow, not from piety, not from proper posture. But, you know, the whole idea of expanding our minds and being willing to rebel against the status quo, at least, you know, that's what I got from it. I think it's a powerful and thought-provoking write and very well done.
Well said, Pam. Thank you. And Ellen, how about you?
I would have to echo exactly what Pam said. What really got for me was it's cleansed of excess, reawakening to possibilities, a spirit chomps upon the bit. With a sudden awakening of mercy, we are flung back to the womb. And that's basically, you know, with the prophet states, we must conquer life by living it to the full. Then we can go to meet death with some prestige. And I like that because basically you've earned your right when you die to actually be, you know, be sought as one who is with, you know, wife and has lived it to the fullest and not for somebody that has just pedaled along and not done anything that they wanted to do, but actually earned what they got when at a death. And then that going back to the womb is just that in itself. It says, you know, with sudden awakening of mercy, we were flung back to the womb. And that just really rings to me. And I've got to read it a couple more times because it's really that great, really powerful, and as Pam said, very thought-provoking.
I like your thought on that. Oh, and now we're at the back end of the hour and the show. So, great night, Pam. Had a lot of fun. Fallon, thank you for stopping in. Victoria, thank you for stopping in. We'll have to do this again next Tuesday. And come see us Sunday for the music. We're doing Lady Gaga this week. All right. And tomorrow, who's your artiste for later on today? Your Twisted Tuesday?
Arnold. Shoot. I'm so horrible with names. Arnold Bachlin. He's well known for his painting, The Isle of the Dead.
Well, wasn't he the one from Bachlin Turner Overdrive back in the 70s?
Was he alive in the 70s?
That was a question that deserved not an answer.
I don't think he was alive in the 70s. But anyway, this was a great show, Rex.
It was a pun.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
I
couldn't catch every word you were saying.
All right, gang. Good night, everybody. Thank you.
Good night.
And come visit me.